Welcome to Sounding Off with Kim Munson. I am so thrilled to have in studio with me my friends Reggie Carr and Johnny Thomas. They are founders of I'm a Trumpster, and it is a very interesting story. Had them on the show just recently, but we thought we needed to have a longer conversation. So, Reggie Carr, welcome to Sounding Off with Kim Munson.
Hey, glad to be here.
Glad to be here. Yeah.
And Johnny Thomas, it's great to have you here, too.
I'm glad to be here, Kim.
Now, you gentlemen have been in the entertainment business for many, many years. So, Reggie, tell us a little bit about that.
Struggle, but it's what we do best. We're very creative people, but I would say if we're going to get to the details of this as far as our talent-wise, I learned at a young age that I was, you know, musically inclined, and my mother helped me with that process. Did a lot of things here in Denver and decided to move to Atlanta and see if I was actually really good enough to make it with the big boys. And I went out there and I came across Johnny fairly early, right, Johnny?
At the studio. Yeah, I think you had moved to Atlanta and you was in a session, and I happened to come up to the studio that day.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, who is this guy? And I could see his whole flavor, his swag and everything. I was just like, okay, I'm a producer. This guy looks like an artist. And so he came in and he was vibing. We had one of the tracks that I did, and he started just vibing and writing stuff to it instantly. I was just like, oh, man, we're going to have to sit down with this guy and see if we can get him under contract. And that's how we met, and then we just vibed from there. So I had a production company, Rock Me Right Productions, and that day. And he came in as an artist, writer. And then the other skill that I found out that he had was, wow, this guy, he's a genius. He knows everybody. Everybody knows him. And his promotional aspects and everything. He was a walking billboard. I'm just like, so to be truthful, I came out there with a lot of tracks and a lot of material and with no connections. I had one connection. And after I met him, that's what opened up the doors. So I was able to go to places like the Lowry Music Group, who was the second biggest independent publisher in the United States. He had already had a deal with them. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay. And even though he had a deal, he could call them, but you just couldn't come up into that building. It's not like that. People think like once you have a relationship with somebody, you can, just drop in anytime. Nah, that's not it. So we were calling and calling, setting up an appointment. Then we finally got an appointment, and we went up there and we met Mr. Bill Lowry, and he loved us. And he's like, hey, what do you guys want? This is good. We like how you produce and write, and of course Johnny's already up here. And we see what you're doing in the production. And so we signed a major publishing deal with the Lowry Music Group. But the introduction strictly came from this man, Johnny Casflow Thomas.
So Johnny Thomas, I guess what the moral of this story is that if you only have one connection, it should be a really good one. So
yes.
tell us about you. What's your story?
Well, my mom, I can, actually... I just want to say my mom died on Memorial Day, 5/25, 5 years ago, right? And she was a soldier for God. She always was somebody wanted her to go sing at the church. So I was a little boy, and I was very protective of my mom. So everywhere she go, I was there with her. So we went from church to church to church to church to church to church. And, and then, she had these albums of these singers, and then I heard James Brown and I heard Aretha Franklin, and I just fell in love with the music, but I couldn't play anything. But it was just natural for me to come up with, melodies and different things like that. And so then hip hop came out and I heard some rap songs, and I was like, oh, that's easy to do. And I did it. And all of a sudden I knew somebody, a club owner in my hometown. He knew somebody in Atlanta, Georgia. So he said, I'm going to make a call. And he made a call and he told this guy about me. And so I flew from a little small town called Pelham, Georgia, and I flew to Atlanta. And from Atlanta, the guy heard me. And then they flew me to California, and I was in the Universal Studios and I had no idea. And I recorded my first record, Lowrider, different things. I'm like, and it just happened so quickly. And then I came to Atlanta, and then all of a sudden, Bill Lowry, like he said, one of the biggest publishers in the South, actually had published it on Elvis, Tams. He had this big recording studio called Soundtrack that 38 Special, Gun and Roses, and everybody used to
Deep
come.
Deep Purple, Southern Tracks Records.
Yeah, Southern Tracks Records. So he heard me, and he said, I want to sign this guy. And all of a sudden, I'm in the same studio as 38 Special and Gun and Roses, and I'm recording. And I'm like, I'm so young, I have no idea what's happening, but I'm in the same studio. So at the end of the day, you know, it opened up a lot of doors, and I met a lot of people, and then I just began to meet people in Atlanta, and that's how it just spun off. And then when I saw Reggie and I heard this music, I was like, wait, he's a genius for its production and chords and could play any different things. And I was like, this is a match in heaven. So he signed me to his production company as an artist, and from there we just made history. And from there I went on to get a deal with Sony Music, and I worked with some of the big artists like Lil Jon and Akon and a lot of big name artists out there, and that's how we made history.
It's to me, it's kind of like the American dream.
It is.
A little guy from a little town. Now, I'm from a little town in Kansas.
Yes.
And sometimes I pinch myself, what can happen here? Anything can happen.
Anything can happen.
You know what's so crazy, Kim? It's crazy because I, as you know, we're black conservatives, okay, before we even get into that. But in the music side, I went to an all-white school. My mom and dad moved me from Denver around, I think it was 38, 15 high, I believe, to Northland. And I went to an elementary school called East Lake Elementary. And I was I was the only black until my brother came. So we lived in a neighborhood in Northland where one side was the field, the other side was the field, in the middle was a subdivision. And so, My mother has passed as well. As you know, I told you before, it's been a little over a year. I owe everything to her. She taught me everything. And what's so crazy is that when I went to that school, that's how I know about racism, you know, that it's taught. It's not something that you're born with. So I had to go to different things. I had to fight every day and all kind of things like that. And the first night we lived there, I had rocks thrown through the window. We broke up with glass. And some of that hatred turned into some of the best friends that I had. Now, when he mentioned music, and I think why I was able to do something in Atlanta is because my favorite group used to be Donnie and Marie. You know, I'm like, I had no idea about, I played the sax, I was in the intermediate and jazz band, you know, just growing all through those levels. And I liked Donnie Marie, you know, at school we were square dancing, you know, I was the only black. And
wasn't me though.
I'm just like, what the heck's going on? And then one day, and meanwhile, my mom's teaching me how to play all these instruments, bass, guitar, all this kind of stuff. And she said, let me get my brother out here and so he can get out here and get with this guy. So he came here with a bass guitar and some groups that I never heard of, like the Commodores, Earth, Wind & Fire, Confunction, you know, Bar K's. And it's just like, have you ever seen that movie, The Jerk, when he finally heard the music that he, you know, got, I was like, I feel this. This is, you know. And so I was in place then. So
Right.
That, along with that, that's what helped me, you know classical jazz and different types of music and all of that. So when I went and met Johnny, that's one of the things he liked about me. And the best is that you couldn't tell that the same producer were doing these different styles of music. And it's because of my background, it's because of what my mom taught me and where I lived, that I was able to go out there and have, you know, different formats to try to get into this business.
Okay. How long have you guys worked together?
All our life, probably.
Man, it's been a long time, 20-plus years. 20-plus years we worked together, and we're still here. And, you know, I credit us as visionaries. It's kind of like, you know what I'm saying, we're visionaries. We kind of see things before it happened, And we like sit down and we're like, okay, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. So we need to do this. And I guess we're business opportunists.
Love that.
Yeah.
Entrepreneurs.
Yes, entrepreneurs.
Like you.
Just like me.
Yeah, definitely. And so we just got a knack with it. And you know what I'm saying? And really, I had a deal with Sony and I was traveling around the world at that time. Reg had got a deal with Rock Pirate Records here in Denver for like millions of dollars. And at the time, I think my deal was like $5 million for like 5 years. And he had got a $1 million plus deal. And we was traveling and we was kind of like separated. And at the time I didn't know he had got a deal and I was at Sony. So it's just like, and somebody was like, hey,
just
kind of blocked us from each other, You know what I'm saying? Because I was like, hey, tell him to get in touch with me. Like, okay, I'll tell him. But I didn't know it. So if we would have connected when the momentum was, we probably would be billionaires right now because I was in Sony Records. I was on the same label with Michael Jackson, Jennifer Lopez. I went from a little small town. It's like 10 miles and you can drive through it and the country is just nothing's there to get to a label on the same label as Michael Jackson, Jennifer Lopez. Wow. And then therefore Sony Records, Sony Pictures. So I was like, I'm going to get right into the movies. So I went to start writing the movie. And so at the end of the day, but God put us here now for this situation. I'm a Trumpster because it's... Music is I love, but this right here is more meaningful.
Yeah, and it's very heartful.
Yeah, heartful what we're doing to help people and us help us come together and help relationships and help racism, help just merge. Because it's just one race. It's really the human race.
Right.
That is so interesting you would say that, Johnny, because I had gone into my doctor, you know, and they're asking, this was several years ago, mm-hmm. and they were asking all these questions, and it put down race, and I said human. They're like,
great.
You know, I'm so frustrated with all this division.
Go ahead. To add on what Johnny was saying, that it wasn't all fun and games. It was a lot of hard work. Mm-hmm. And there's things that he helped me with. And like I said, and there's things I helped him with. You know, being a producer, I was always wanting to be behind the scenes mm-hmm. and all that stuff. And he's, you know, up front and all of that. And some of the things that I lacked, he provided. And some of the things he lacked, I provided. Because after he was signed with me, you know, I used to get on Johnny and his partner all the time. Hey, man. Y'all got to get into these contracts. You got to do this and all that. And they just had so much flavor. It's hard to, you know, if your feathers are so bright, you can't really cage somebody like that. Mm-hmm. And we stayed in the same apartment and we learned. And so we did all of these things. And then even though after our contract was over, we still stayed in touch and we still did different things. Mm-hmm. But he went out and learned what he got from me. And got a major deal, you know. I'm just like, wow, that's impressive. And the same way, I learned how to deal with people being from Denver now, you know. And they always call me, what's the word, corporate?
Yes.
And he said, hey man, go ahead, you know, do your little swag, and you know, other words, I was an L7 kind of square.
Kind of a little square, like just a little lame. You know, it's okay.
He taught me how to, you know, bring a little bit of that out, and it was a perfect mix. So when we were our separate ways, we've always been together. But there's people, and we won't mention them because they're people that you know. We've had a hit record in Europe. We was in the studio one day. And a guy come in, was like, and he's with another major camp, and he says, oh, yeah, you know that song, blah, blah, yeah, that's it. Yeah. He said, I just got back from Europe. We're like, okay, what? I said, nah, you must be talking about something else. He said, nah. He named the name of the song and all that. He said, it's number one. We're like.
Like number one in Europe, and we didn't even know about it. We didn't know we had a number one song.
Right.
We was over here, and the song was number one and just blowing up. And somebody cashed in on that. To this day,
we're sitting at intellectual property. You know, it's
okay.
So you understand why Trump kicked us off.
Well, okay. And so with that, I was talking with my researcher, Patty, mm-hmm. About intellectual property. And I remember my kids, there was something, I think it was called, was it called Napster or something?
Where
there was
Napster.
free music.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I went round and round with my kids about intellectual property. I was like, I couldn't get my brain around this, that there's something for free, there's no ads, you know, the kids are like, oh, this is great. But I'm like, but what about intellectual property? And they said, well, those, you know, those artists, how they could make their money is that they could give concerts. And I said, well, that's a lot of hard work. And I said, quite frankly, if we don't protect intellectual property, then I think, you know, many of our artists might go away. I mean, and so that has been something that's been on my heart for a lot of years.
Mm-hmm. Hey, that, you want me to go?
Yeah, go ahead.
That's so true. Before I left Colorado, okay, I did all these things. I had no idea about intellectual property, publishing, copyrights, none of that. I was just on the talent side. And I started learning. There was a guy named Vernon Bullock. He was a major producer. He's passed now. He worked with a lot of old school artists. And he just out here is like, hey, man, you're very talented. But guess what? You don't know bleep about the business. You know, he's the one that told me about copyrights and publishing and all of that stuff. And I was just like, what is this? So I looked, I remember that day, one of Kaz's favorite artists back in the day was Michael Jackson. So I looked on the album and I turn it over and I say, okay, Michael Jackson's on the front, but underneath this song, I don't see his name there. And then I see all these other people listed underneath this category. And I'm just like, what's going on? So that was the beginning of eyes opening that this was a business. It's a lot of people that's intertwined and together to make an artist or a song happen. So I learned all that here. I went to California, I came back here, and then I went to Atlanta. And when I was in Atlanta, I was already skilled on the business side, but I had no idea what was going on. He's a loyal person, I'm a loyal person. And we was like coming out here and say, man, this was really going on. This is what we got to do. So that intellectual property was true. And then when you mentioned Napster, the catch was this. If you have a song and you buy it, it's your song. Now, is it illegal for somebody, if Kaz buys a CD, if he wants to give it to his friend, his mom, or blah, blah, whatever that, he can do that. So that was the argument with Napster, that people were buying their songs and then they were giving them to Napster and he was just posting them up on the website.
Okay.
So you could go to the website and download them because they were bought.
Okay.
You know, so if he buys them, if you buy something that you belong, that's your property.
Uh-huh.
But they had to change the rules because that's why they were all going for free. You didn't pay for anything on Napster. But it was a lot of people. Those are sales that, you know, the artists and the writers and producers and all these people that's behind the song never got any royalties on. And they only got paid once when they should have got paid, you know, probably 500 times.
Yes.
Okay.
That was a loophole that they left out. They missed that.
Yep.
And so I think I'm trying to go back in memory on this. So it was like, so the property, the intellectual property was purchased once,
mm-hmm.
but then the person that purchased it,
mm-hmm.
then they took advantage of that intellectual property. And so in essence, the artist didn't have a market maybe because somebody had taken their property and was handling
right.
that market. Is that right, Johnny?
Yes, that's okay. Absolutely right.
That's
okay.
Exactly. The labels didn't get money. The production companies didn't get money. The writers didn't get money. The publishers didn't get money. There's a lot. The managers didn't get money. There's a lot of people that get paid underneath that one song.
Yes.
With the copyrights and intellectual property. So, and then in the street, Johnny, he's turned me on to this because I didn't know this kind of thing wasn't going on in Denver. So he's like, yo, Reg, look at this. So go to the store, buy a CD. Go to your house, put it in a computer, dub the CD, buy blank CDs, dub them, and then go out in the street and sell them. That's another way. You're
mix CDs, they call mixtapes.
Right.
So I go get all the popular songs. So you might got 15 popular songs
uh-huh.
that I go and buy. Then I go and get me a blank CD, and I put all the number one hits on this one CD. And then I go out and sell it
on the street
for right. $10-$15 and it's going to sell because all of them are number one songs
mm-hmm.
and so you know people made a living off of that
yes.
you know what I'm saying hundreds and thousands of dollars
barbershops gas stations.
Yes.
I mean, it wasn't just Napster. Napster was just the commercial that was in it, but all the money was in the streets and in the clubs. Everybody was selling CDs because. And then when I was at the Grammys, I was VIP guest at the Grammys, and one of the things they were saying about was copyright sampling and things like that. And he said, "Well, the only way we're going to have to make better product, because if we make better product, if the artist has, you know, 5-7 songs on there that are hits versus one, people won't feel like they're getting ripped off. So you go and buy a $20 album or a $15 album and it's only one good song on there, people are upset. So like he said, he'll go out and make the initial purchase and of all the hits and put all those hits, because there's only one, maybe two on each album, and put them all on one CD, and now he's got a mega CD. He's got all the hits for $15.
It's going to sell.
And it's going to sell, because, like hotcakes.
Because the radio is playing it every day, and so everybody hearing all of those number one songs, and when they look on the CD, it's everything that they like, and they give you the money.
There you go.
That's okay.
Okay. So that moves to intellectual property.
Yes.
And so, Johnny, tell us first about, you know, from a political standpoint, what kind of a household did you grow up in?
I grew up in a very spiritual, God-fearing household. My father's a reverend. My father was a cop, sheriff, game warden. My grandparents built the church. So I grew up, you know, just singing in the choir, God every day, going to church 3-4 times a day. And then by my dad being a cop, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, he was a cop, he was a sheriff. And so I just had how do I want to say this? I was very disciplined. I couldn't do too much. The radar was on me, so I had to walk a straight line, you know what I'm saying?
And then born black Democrat.
Exactly, yeah. So that's just kind of how it was, you know what I'm saying? A lot of love, though, a lot of love in the house, a lot of love. And by us being very God-fearing people, it just kept me out of a lot of things. It kept me transparent, kept me honest, kept me, you know what I'm saying? So that's kind of how.
I do, okay. And how about you, Reggie?
I wasn't, it's my mother. Again, I never did any drugs, never, no felonies, no misdemeanor, none of that kind of stuff. You know, you're a little kid, you're growing up, people make mistakes, everybody does, but nothing major, like you said, transparent, keep straight. She taught me from a young age to always, you know, treat people how you want to be treated, even better than you want to be treated. And, only thing that we never discussed was politics. And I didn't get into politics till literally 3 years ago. But I knew that I'm looking at all my family and friends and just tons and tons and tons of black people, minorities, and they all were on the same thing, on the same page. And none of it makes sense. I said, hold on, wait. I'm going to school. You know, you got me out here in this, you know, this white education. And what I'm learning, what I'm going through and what I'm seeing, what I'm learning, what I'm reading, I'm just like, hey, hold up, something's going on. Now, didn't the Republicans free the slaves? I'm like, what's up? There's some false narratives going on here. And so I just said, I'm going to stay out of it. And I'm going to concentrate, just stay in music and just keep this. You know, I was just like, but I could see that, you know, the politic world is different, but I can definitely see that on the Democratic side, that things weren't just adding it up. I would go to my friend's house in North Glen, and they would have a big house, big farm, ranches. You know, I was getting chased by bulls in one pen, sheep in another. I'm just like, hey, I'm a black guy. I got to get out of here. This is their everyday life, right? They were laughing, and we had a great time. But I was just like, they were all Republicans. And I said, Democrat seems like most people be in poverty. Republican, it seemed like they have money. Then I said, wow, it seemed like, you know, every time I talk with someone on the Republican side, they want to teach me how to fish. And when I talk on the Democrat, they're talking about what they can get for free. I'm just like, man, I can't get this. I said, I don't know what's up with this. So I just stayed in the middle. And like I said, didn't anything excite me. I learned and learned as the years go by, but didn't anything excite me until I heard President Trump's voice and then, you know, Donald Trump's voice about intellectual properties. But that was a lifetime of experiences, a bunch of great ones, some hard ones, but through it all, stayed strong and did what we needed to do, did what I needed to do. And I owe that completely to my mom.
Okay, so you hear a candidate talking about intellectual property, and that was when you became politically active.
Completely. And that's just what opened the door. And that's how he got to me. Then once the door was open, I seen all these other things that he was doing and what he believed in, like, you know, America first. Who can't get behind that? Americans. Donald Trump, to me, doesn't see color. The only color he sees is red, white, and blue. And that's what I'm about, and you know, what he's saying. I know from being poor, being rich, being poor, rich. You can, if I have any problems, I don't know about you, Kaz, but I think I'd rather have rich problems than poor problems.
Any day.
When all the things that he stood for and stands for, I was completely behind him. And then, you know, we know about fake news. You know, you can take that off the table. We know how, you know, when there's a movie being filmed, we know behind, you know, that it's take 6, take 10, say this, say that, do this. You know, the graphics, the animation, and then about time you put the whole package together, then you see, wow, this is the effect. But if you ever want to, stay, like when you go to a movie or to a play or anything like that, if you ever want to stay, keep that excitement and feel that rush, don't go to filming of movies. Don't go to filming of TV. Don't go behind the scenes, because once you see it, you can't unsee it. So the hype is
takes
not the
magic
same.
Out of it.
Because perfect.
Yeah,
perfect
take
word.
Takes the magic out of it. And I guess to mirror what he's saying is kind of like, I guess where I was from. It was just, I grew up and we didn't have the knowledge and wisdom and understanding what voting was all about. It's just, you was black and you supposed to vote Democrat. That's what it was. Never got taught about anything, never knew any political note, just nothing. So I couldn't really relate to it. All I know is like, you better go vote and you better go vote for this person, but you never got taught why, what they're doing, why to vote for this person. So it just, you know, I just never understood politics, because it was just like my grandparents, I guess his dad told him that was what you were supposed to do and whatever, you just vote here, but no explanations. You never had a conversation. It's just you're just Democrat. Mm-hmm. Just vote Democrat for the Democrats if you want to, you know. And then when I got up, I wasn't really into politics either, and he got me kind of into it. So I'm like, intellectual pop. So I said, let me go check this Donald Trump out. You know what I'm saying? I heard about him, just a billionaire before, and he was on a TV show and had all those different mm-hmm. things. So mm-hmm. I said, okay, let me listen to him. So when I actually start to watch, I say, this guy kind of just says what's on his mind.
You think?
I was like, okay, he's kind of blunt. Oh, this guy right here, he just kind of, we can relate to him, because he's, if you come at me, I'm going to snap back at you. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So he's just not this, you know, Obama was very tamed, and, you know, he was just kind of like orchestrated.
Imitated. He was fake.
He was just, yeah. And this guy, he's just kind of like, hey, I'm a realist. I'm going to say what's on my mind. If you know, throw rocks at me, I'm going to throw a rock back at you, because I know I'm going to call you out on it. And I was like, oh, I kind of like that. He ain't just, and I saw that he couldn't be unbought. And what really made me like him is one day he was supposed to be appearing somewhere speaking, and they told him, hey, we don't want you to bring your aircraft, your helicopter. We just want you to show up. And then all of a sudden, his helicopter showed up, and he had the kids playing. I say, wait a minute, he can't not be tamed. He's like, that's my helicopter. I bought it. I'm going to bring it, and I'm going to do what I want to do. I was like, okay, I kind of like him. So he was different from what I had, you know, what I've normally seen in Obama. And so at the end of the day, I was like, okay, I got interested in him. I started listening to him. And then as I got deeper and deeper, I'm like, if you don't have a discernment, you'll get lost in the media hype and what's really going on. But it's way bigger than what they're telling us. And I'm like, wait a minute. He is fighting against
everything.
Globalists.
Yeah.
And then he say, okay, if you're American, how can you fight against a person that say America first, if you hear? What's wrong with that? Okay, if I go to another country and I don't have a passport, or I don't, you know what I'm saying, I don't have anything to get, and I go across that border, guess what they're going to do? They're going to lock me up. Mm-hmm. So if he's saying, you know, hey, we got to make sure they're legal, we got to do the due process, but when he said it's a problem for us. So wait right. a minute, I'm just kind of like, that don't make any sense. What, you know what I'm saying? So it don't make no sense why they're attacking this guy when he's about America.
Right.
Okay, gentlemen. So you decide to do something about it, Reggie.
Yes. Okay. So to pick up from there, we was in the studio. We talked and listened to him and blah, blah, this, that. I came back to the house. I thought that, you know, sharing information, knowledge is power. I said, okay, I'm going to share information with my family, with my friends and people like me so they can understand. Because they're all, oh, Reggie, you're doing good. You're doing this and this and this and this and this. Okay, it's a lot of work, a lot of money that we invested in. I invested in myself. And I'm just like, well, guess what I just learned? And, you know, because of all of this, I owe Atlanta a lot. I owe everybody a lot that helped me on this journey and this knowledge journey. But they didn't want to hear what I had to say. And not only did they alienated me after that. They didn't, it was like enemies. I mean, I don't even talk to them today. They cannot believe that, you know, I'm helping this man get reelected. They can't believe it. It's like we've lost jobs.
I'm single, right? I'm single. I'm single, and I met a couple of females that I was dating. And matter of fact, we was at the event. I had my Trumpster hat on. I took a couple pictures, and I met the. And she said, "Won't you send me some pictures?" And I was like, "Okay, I'm gonna send this one. I'm gonna send this one." And I sent a picture with me having the Trumpster hat on, and that was the biggest mistake I did. I lost all interest. She stopped calling. It's just incredible. They don't even want to talk to me at all anymore. But I was this great guy, right. Everything before. But when she saw that I supported Donald Trump, ink.
That was it.
Isn't it fascinating? It's just fascinating. So, but you gentlemen started I'm a Trumpster. And this is, the hats, they're not like the MAGA hats. They're a little different hat.
Right.
So tell us about that, Reggie.
I sat down with my chief strategist over here. And he was like, hey, yeah, we gotta reach them. But, you know, we have to.
When we say reach, meaning you want
to
reach your...
We have to relate to the minorities because we want to teach and change and do this so we can get their attention. First thing we have to do is get their eyes open, their ears open, and then we can talk. And then with our people, it's different. We can't just go in there, you know, and some, you know, regular this, regular that, regular this.
Fashion.
We have to come something that excites their eyes, their mind.
Swag.
The swag and all that.
Fashion is a certain type of way when you put on a outfit and your hat got to lay a certain way. And that's what we created, design, where, you know, you can wear this hat, you know, you got the other hats that I say, they kind of bend them and they kind of look like a fisherman or something like that. But with us.
You mean all the hats I have at home?
Yeah, exactly.
Except for my, I'm a Trumpster hat. Okay.
Yeah. So with these hats, it's kind of like we made them look fashionable where, hey, if I put on this outfit with these tennis shoes, I can put on this hat and it can go with my outfits and it's color coordinated.
Right.
And we kind of made it like it could be a part of your outfit.
And cool. That's what did it. And so when we came up with that, we're like, okay, so what's the next step? Their eyes are open. We said, okay, we're going to have to get the word out. So we were going to get a van? It was a van we were going to wrap, right?
Yeah. But that wouldn't be good.
That wasn't enough that it would do nothing. Matter of fact, we'd probably get laughed at, truthfully. Now, in the
normal world.
Normal world, the Caucasian world, they don't care. They're like, oh, that's a van. Oh, he wrapped his car. You know, he's up there. That's a real supporter. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If we would have did that, they'd have been like, look at these damn fools out here. You know, so we had to go big. And he's a big thinker. So if I come up with something and with this, I always say, hey, man, what you think? And if he says, this is hot, I love it, then, you know, I know it's, I got something. And then he comes in and we go to the next level. But if he says, hey, nah, that's not going to work, we need to go bigger, we need to go stronger, blah, 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 then we break it down.
And we have to make a statement. So it was like, that's not going to work, we're going to need something really big. A helicopter? No, we need something big. We need something long. And so I said, you know, we got to get a moving billboard. And right. And that's how we came up with the bus.
Right.
And we say, okay, we need to get the bus. And the bus is 45 feet long and
12.5 inches high.
And they can't miss that. So if you're driving down the street, no matter where you go, they're not going to be able to miss it, and you're going to be able to make a statement.
Right.
And once we canvass Colorado, the world, not just Colorado, but the world would know, because right now it's hype and it's flavor, and people are going to take their phones out and they're going to hit it and they're going to put it on the internet and Facebook. And before you know it, the word is going to get out and you'll be around the world in a matter of months.
Okay. So you gentlemen have really funded all this that you're doing. You went back to New York. You have done all, and 98% of all this has been your money because you really care. I understand. I care.
Definitely.
You know, I buy my airtime. I get it. You know, this education, it's so, so important.
Yes.
But you know what? Some grassroots help would really, it would be a really good thing. People want to do something. And there has been a lack of excitement and leadership that you guys bring to the table. And my friends out there who are listening, I encourage you to come alongside us, partner with us. When we see the craziness that's going on in our world right now, we need to protect this republic. We need to protect a republic where the three of us sitting here, we all came from very humble beginnings. I'll just put it that way. And here we are, you know, on the airwaves. In America, anything can happen.
Anything can happen.
And we don't want to let that be destroyed. So we need grassroots people. We need to step up. And so we would like to raise $10,000 to help you wrap the bus. You guys have already gotten the bus. It's going to be here soon.
Right.
Let's get it wrapped so that then you can take that into ethnic communities. We're going to have a party on your mother's birthday, June 26th.
Is it 26th or 25th? I don't remember. My mom's birthday is the 25th.
No, it's the 25th. You're right. We're going to have it on, I think it's a Friday the 25th. And Friday the 25th. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
And so, my friends, go to imatrumpster.com, correct?
Correct.
And contribute. If you contribute $50, that gets your ticket to the party. But we do this, and all of our Tapas and Topics girls are going to be helping out with this as well. Everybody brings something to eat or drink, so we don't have any catering costs.
Right.
You're going to have the bus there. People can get their picture taken. And you have these very cool battle masks that celebrate America. And so for $50, you can get a battle mask. You get to come to the party. If you can't come, still contribute $50. Obviously, $100 for a couple. Get two battle masks. If you can contribute more. But we need to make this happen. And it has to be a grassroots thing. And so, gentlemen, I'm excited to come along with you and work on this.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, we definitely just need the support, because it's kind of like, for me, when he called me, and it's just kind of like, I know it was important to him, and, you know, and I was like, you know, and I was like in Atlanta, and I'm like, okay, I'm getting ready to, you know, buy me another house, and I'm going to take my money. I was like, had bought me a couple cars, and I was like on my way, and he was like, hey, I'm doing this, and I was like, ah, man, I got my house. I go my car. And so, you know, and to get these things, you know, you understand that these people who are in election, they got donation. I think I get a message every 2 seconds from Donald Trump wants some money. And so, because, you know, they get millions of dollars. The bus is, you know, worth hundreds of thousands of dollars that we had to go get. And the fund, the product, and pay for everything, we're doing this all out of our pockets. You know what I'm saying? So
it's not, and it's not because you haven't asked. You know, gentlemen, someone has done some research, and this last election cycle here in Colorado, there was $70 million that was spent on center-right candidates and issues. And it is astounding to me that, you know, what you guys are looking for just to finish this bus off really has been about $60,000.
Right.
That we have had trouble, you know, getting that. You know, it's chump change when you're looking at those numbers. So what happens? You're a faithful person, Johnny. Reggie, you're a faithful person. I am too. Is it's like, okay, let's roll up our sleeves.
Yep.
My friends, grassroots, $50,
yes.
$100.
Yes.
But we need to make that happen very soon. Now, one other thing, anything else you guys want to say about that?
No, I think you've covered it. We just need to come together as a team, because the Democrats, it doesn't matter what they do, if it's a lie, whatever the narrative is, they get behind it and they stick together with this crazy stuff that they do. And they don't care if it's true or not. And they put money, they pump a lot of money behind.
And they get a lot of taxpayer money as well. You know, you see a lot of these quote unquote nonprofits, you know, all these different consulting companies out there.
Yes.
You know, they get a contract here, a contract here. There, it's with our money, but it funds their agenda.
Wow.
And so we really need to help you guys. So one other thing. Oh, go ahead, Johnny.
No, I want to make sure they because I don't know, maybe they're not getting the website wrong. They go into it. It's I'm a Trumpster, and that's imatrumpster.com. So that's imatrumpster.com.
Okay. One other question, because I've been asking people to email me and to let me know so that we can make sure that they're part of the party. Is there something on there they can also note that they're giving towards the bus?
Yes.
Okay.
Every donation that comes in, it's everything's calculated, and it's all saved computer wise, you know, and the database. So they can leave a note. They can be anonymous. They can do whatever. All they have to do is just go there, do it, and type whatever they want in.
Okay. And then if they think of it, and also can email me, Kim at KimMunson, MUNSON.com. That keeps us, you know, checking each other's
exactly
on this. We have just a couple of minutes. So I am so excited that you gentlemen are going to be joining the Crawford Broadcasting KLZ team with a radio show.
Oh, yeah. KLZ 560 AM.
You got it, Johnny Thomas. Yeah.
That's ridiculous. That's that talent showing through.
That is that talent. That's for sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, we have a show thanks to you. You know, we have to give you a lot of credit, Kim. You've been there on the front, the middle, the back, on top, underneath, zigzag, everywhere you can imagine. You've been there for us, and our team is incredible, you know. So we come to you for a lot of leadership and help, and thank you for that very much.
Yeah, and we definitely thought about, okay, I researched, you know, Crawford, and I was like, hey, so I told Reggie, I said, let's do a radio show. Our backgrounds, we can bring, you know, a little different feel. And also what we wanted to do on our radio show, we actually are going to let the listeners, they're actually going to, I guess, call in and talk about what they want to talk about. It's not going to be where we're going to be the ones who set the narrative of the show.
Wow.
We're going to have people that they can call into this radio show, whatever they want to talk about, and we can talk about it.
Nice.
Right.
So this will debut, we think that's going to be what, June 14th?
Yeah, June 14th.
4 yes. to 5 p.m., KLZ 560. That call-in number will be 303-477-5600. Mm-hmm. We're just about out of time. Johnny Thomas, what is the kind of the final thought you'd like to leave with our listeners?
I just want to say that we are one people, the human race, and I'm going to give everything I got until we come together hand in hand and fight the madness. That's it, bottom line.
Thank you, Reggie.
I echo that. I couldn't have said it any better. We're just going to, you know, roll up our sleeves, like you said, and get in people's face and say, hey, look, it's not about hate. It's about love. In order for evil to triumph is for good men and women to do nothing. And so we're out here to do it. So that's where we leave it.
Reggie, you're channeling your Edmund Burke. So, gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kim. This has been
just great. So this is Sounding Off with Kim Munson. I've been talking with Reggie Carr and Johnny Thomas, the creators of I'm a Trumpster. They will be debuting on KLZ 560 on June 14th, 4 to 5 p.m. Can't wait for that. Gentlemen, you're my friends. I really appreciate it.
We love you.
Love you.
Yeah, so my listeners, God bless you. God bless America.
God bless America.